We all have the same 24 hours, but how we talk about them, plan them, and spend them shapes how we live, lead, and learn. Welcome to the Fluent Edge podcast.
I'm Dr. Howie Jacobson, executive coach, author, and mindset strategist.
And I'm Sean Watson, your English communication coach and accent clarity specialist. In today's episode, we're talking about time, how we think about it, talk about it, and how we use it, especially when we're aiming to grow, lead, and communicate with impact. So Howie, what's one belief about time you've had to unlearn or reframe in your life?
I think the main belief that I've had to unlearn is that everybody sees time the same way. I grew up in a world of analog watches. So if you were within a couple of minutes, that was on time. You know, 4:02, 3:58 was all considered on time. As I grew, I moved into a digital world where time became more exact. And then I traveled in different countries and people would show up 15 minutes late and be very upset if you were upset. And I went to classes that didn't start for 15, 20 minutes and I'd become very agitated that people don't respect time, but then the class would start and then they would last for an extra 2 hours and nobody wanted to leave. For me, my idea of time was all bound up in morality. Like a good person is punctual. It's inconsiderate to be late. If you are meeting me and you have to drive and there might be traffic, it's your job to make sure you get there early and you don't make excuses. And so for me, unlearning my idea of time was the only right one, and that it was related to quality of a person's character. Once I understood those two things were not true, I became a much nicer person and much more effective in dealing globally with people who treat time differently than me.
I know in some cultures, when people are engaged in a conversation, it's quite common to interrupt each other or speak over each other. And I was always taught the opposite, that we have to listen and let the other person finish their thought and think about it and then respond. But I know that that's not always the way that conversation is approached, right?
Yeah. If it's two of us in the same culture and I'm always interrupting you, that's probably a characterological issue. And I may be a little bit neurodivergent. And if I have an idea, it feels like it has to come out now or I'm going to lose it. I might feel like I'm trying to dominate you in some way and I have to be right all the time. But if it's cross-culturally, chances are that interrupting a story to agree with it or make a point or to show how it's affected you is actually a polite thing to do.
English is full of expressions that treat time like a race or even a threat. And I just wanted to share three expressions. The first one is to beat the clock. And this is not physically beating the clock, although sometimes you might feel like you want to beat the clock. Right? So what does beat the clock mean? It means you want to finish something just before a deadline. So for example, if I say we had to beat the clock to submit the report. The second one is crunch time. And growing up, crunch for me was always related to breakfast cereals, like Captain Crunch, for example. What about for you, Howie?
Yeah, absolutely.
You remember those cereals?
Yeah, peanut. I like the peanut Captain Crunch.
Me too. It's confession time. I haven't touched those in decades. So if I said it's crunch time, we need all hands on deck. And all hands on deck means we need everybody involved in finishing something before the deadline. And the last one is the expression in the nick of time. So this means just barely on time. So for example, if I say she caught the train in the nick of time. So when we think of these expressions, how does this kind of language shape our mindset around time, stress, and urgency?
When you put them like that, it certainly feels stressful and urgent. And the word that came to my mind is deadline. The thing that makes time relevant to what I'm doing now is the deadline, which I never until just now thought about in terms of it's got the word dead in it, which is about as stressful as you could get, which reminds me of a line in one of Shakespeare's plays where the old crotchety king says, I have killed time and now time doth kill me. So it feels like in my culture that time is an enemy. When I'm having fun, time flies, so I don't get to enjoy it for very long. Something else that I've heard and have been fascinated by is if you think about where the past is, it's behind you. If you're looking at a screen, the past would be on the left. In some cultures, the past is in front of you because the past has happened and you can see it. And the future is unknowable, so it's behind you. In Western cultures, time is linear. So we have this idea of progress and things things should be getting better and better and better. Many cultures, it's cyclical or spiral. So there's much more of an acceptance of bad times and good times, lean times and rich times.
The two techniques that I've used, the first one is the Pomodoro technique, where I focus on something like crazy. And even if things are going really well and I'm in the flow, I still take a break before I continue. Has that worked for you, or have you tried that?
I've tried lots of things. I find the Pomodoro works very well for certain types of tasks. It works well for tasks of medium depth, let's say editing or figuring out the schedule for something. So it's sort of a mid-level creative task where I could easily burn out. I find where it doesn't work for me, a piece of creative writing where once I get into the flow, I want to keep going. So then I'll typically aim for 60 to 90 minutes of hard thinking where I want to be surprised, where I don't know what I'm going to write, where I want it to emerge. And I may have to write things I already know for 75 minutes to get to a new idea, to kind of backwash all of the old stuff out of my head. And if I Pomodoro that, I keep resetting to my original ideas. And so I never get to the new ones.
And what about time blocking?
It's one of the things that I insist that the people that I coach use, because they are required to be at so many other people's disposal all the time that they complain they never get their own work done. Or if they do get their own work done, they never have time for the strategic long-term thinking that is important but not urgent. So I teach them that, you know, if you have a meeting with your boss from 1 to 2 p.m., you will not miss that meeting. You'd have to be on a stretcher on the way to a hospital to miss a meeting with your boss. Or if your most important client is going to talk to you from 10 to noon, you don't blow that off. You don't say, oh, I have a meeting with my team, or I have to run down to the store because we're out of copy paper. And so I teach my clients to time block with themselves as if they are their most important client or they are their manager, and to treat that meeting with the same respect and almost sacredness as they would a meeting with their most important client or with their boss, and put that in first. Make those time blocks secondary. So if there's a meeting that happens every Monday from 9 to 10, and you know that Monday from 9 to 10 is your best thinking time, if you have the power, and most people do, they think they don't. Most people do have the power to at least bring it up and say, I time block 9 to 11 on Monday, Wednesday, and Friday for deep work. And I request that nobody schedule anything during that time because I probably will not be available. So I think time blocking is one of the most powerful techniques we can use to respect ourselves.
Yeah, that tends to be my go-to at the moment as well. As somebody who's an expat now living in Spain, I know that learning Spanish is an obvious priority for you. What would you say to someone who says, I don't have time to work on my English fluency?
They might be right. But when they say they don't have time, what they're really saying is it's not as important as other things. And that might be correct. Mm-hmm. They might be involved in a coding sprint. They might be having to deal with settling a family in a new city. So when you say you don't have time for something, what you mean to say is, I am not making this a priority relative to other things. And if that's true, then you're making a good decision. But if you think about it and you say, well, the truth is that spending 45 minutes a day working on English is exhausting and it's not fun, but I really need to improve my English. If there's a conflict between the outcome you want and the way you're behaving, then we can take a look at why is it not fun? Are there ways to incorporate it into what you're already doing? One of the nice things about language is that we use it whenever we communicate. So if your job involves communication, can you incorporate English learning into those communications? Can you do it a different time of day?
Yeah.
I've set myself up. I wanted to do an hour of Spanish every morning because I was doing it. I wouldn't do anything else. And so I could check the box. But after half an hour, my brain was fried.
So I can share a little personal story. I like to read, but because of the amount of screen time I'm doing now because of my work, I've tended to sometimes skim through books or not read them completely or sort of jump to the most important bits. So a while back, a friend of mine invited me to join a book club, and it was just once a month. But my first response was, I'd love to, but I just don't don't have the time right now. And he stopped and looked at me and he said, Sean, you have to learn to make time for moments like this. And that really landed for me. It wasn't about fitting more in. It was really about valuing the things that feed me and being honest about what matters. So guess what? I made time. And now I live an hour and a half from where the book club is, even farther away than I did before. But now, no matter what, every month I make my way into Toronto. We just had a book club meeting a couple of nights ago. It's also a chance to hang out with a group of people, and it makes us accountable. So every month people will ask me, Sean, what's your take on the book? What did you think about the ending? What did you think about the second chapter? And regardless of how many times I stop and start reading books, I know that each year I will have completed 12 books. And maybe that's not a lot in some people's metrics, but I know every year I can guarantee that 12 books will be read.
Mm-hmm. I'm not a mathematician, but I believe that's 12 more than zero.
Precisely.
Which may be the average that a North American reads a year, might be zero post-high school. You know, so technology will significantly affect our sense of time. There was a book written in the 80s by Jeremy Rivkin. I can't remember. It was The Something of Time. He talked about when people started really working with computers, the way they spoke to each other changed, especially, you know, hardcore computer programmers. So if your friends are the computer programmer and you haven't seen them in 3 months, and then you see them, they'll continue the conversation that you left off 3 months ago, because that's how they would be with the computer. The computer doesn't go, oh, hey, how's everything? What's new? The computer is at the same point. And as things have gotten faster, you and I both remember when you'd open Microsoft Word and it would take 2 or 3 minutes from when you click the open icon to when there was a page ready to type or edit. Now things have become much more instantaneous. And I think we can start treating each other like we treat our electronics. So I believe in taking a digital Sabbath at least once a day to reset our brains to a more human pace.
I love that. I also try to do that actually on Saturdays. That's the closest I'm getting to a digital Sabbath, I guess. So I just check messages 3 times a day, once at breakfast, once at noon, and once around supper time. So that's sort of my mini Sabbath. But it really does make a difference. I've got more presence. I've got more clarity. So I think to build in a Sabbath on a daily basis, on a weekly basis, there's never been a better time for that type of Sabbath.
I think the one I would want to highlight here is thinking that if you're under time pressure, that means you have to speed up. There are so many disciplines in which slow is fast.
I just wanted to bring up a few additional phrases that we use for time. So one of them is time is of the essence. Time is of the essence means that urgency is critical. Another one is to push the deadline. So this means that we need to delay the due date of something. So if I say, can we push the podcast deadline by 2 days, for example? And then the last one, which a lot of my clients do know, but for the benefit of people who don't know it, it's the phrase to circle back. The phrasal verb to circle back, right? To return to something later. Let's circle back to this during our Q&A session today.
One thing I'm learning living in Spain is that the word time has many different meanings. And I didn't realize it because it's all one word in English. So are you having a good time? What time is it? How many times have you done it? In Spanish, those are 3 different words. So I think in English, we can become sloppy or vague. There's advantages to that in terms of abstraction. But when we're communicating with other cultures, or when other cultures are communicating in English, I think there can be misunderstandings because of the different nuances related to the word time. And, you know, there's sort of chronological time, there's geological time, Einsteinian time. Time is different from Newtonian time in that there's relativity. Time flies when you're having fun. There was a wonderful study about men getting colonoscopies, which is apparently a very uncomfortable procedure.
Been there, bought the t-shirt.
Yeah. You should wear the t-shirt more.
I actually did. I've worn it out because I had to go so many times.
So one group got the colonoscopy for 10 minutes, let's say. I'm fudging the numbers a little bit because I don't remember. And when it was done, they just removed the scope and it was over. And the second group, they did it for 10 minutes, same, and then left it in for an additional 5 minutes, left the scope in, but didn't move it around. Then they asked each group to rate how unpleasant it was. Guess which group liked it better?
I'm going to go with the first group.
You would, wouldn't you? Because having the thing up your butt is still uncomfortable, even if it's not moving. It was the opposite.
Right.
The group that ended with less discomfort, even though it lasted 5 minutes longer, they rated it as subjectively less annoying because of what's called recency bias, that the last thing they remembered was not being so bad. So our perception of experiences over time is very different from a cesium atom atomic clock time. And I think we need to take that into account also when we are planning and deciding how to spend our lives, right? There's an interesting word. You spend time.
Right. Mm-hmm. Wow. We've put together a free download to go with this episode, perfect for English learners and communication professionals alike. And it includes a curated list of idioms, expressions, and phrasal verbs about time with definitions and examples, as well as short, engaging audio dialogues using real-world expressions about deadlines, time pressure, scheduling, and much more. You'll find the download link in the show notes or YouTube description. It's totally free and packed with practical tools. If you enjoyed this episode, please subscribe and share the Fluent Edge with friends or colleagues who are working on their English or leadership communication. And if you're looking for support beyond the podcast, we've each opened up spots for one-on-one coaching. Howie helps professionals avoid burnout, lead with purpose, and shift their mindset for sustainable success.
And if you're focused on English clarity, global presence, or confident communication, book a free discovery call with Sean to explore how the two of you can sharpen your voice and impact together. So we've included links to both of our free discovery calls in the show notes and episode description, so check those out if you're curious. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next time. Keep thinking clearly, communicating boldly, and leading with your voice.
Stay sharp, stay human, stay fluent.